Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler, running a little bit late today, a little bit of a technical problem, caught up in some other programming as well with all of the events, the tragedy playing out in Boston, of course, at the marathon, and now the hunt for one of the two remaining alleged terrorists. And I say the word alleged, but we know who this guy is. The real bottom line is that we are truly a nation that is being challenged, and that's what this program is all about. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS, the mission that now, at least on paper, is supposed to be carried out by ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, and several other components of DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, that out of frustration I often refer to as the Department of Homeland Surrender. I'm anticipating that I will be joined by a guest shortly, a gentleman by the name of Joe Dugan. In fact, Joe is with us. I'm going to bring him on, but I'll continue on in a moment. Happy Friday, Joe Dugan. Can you hear me, Joe?
Yes, I can.
Well, we have a really bad connection. I'm going to ask you to try to call back in again because you're coming in really broken if you're on a cell phone. Yeah, try a different location or a different phone, Joe.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Well, that was Joe Dugan, sort of. In any event, while we're waiting for him to call back in, hopefully on a better line, let me give out three websites that I would love for you to visit if you're not familiar with them. MichaelCutler.net is my own personal website. My last name, of course, C-U-T-L-E-R, MichaelCutler.net. I also have another website, TalkBorder.com, one word. I have a bunch of videos up of interviews I've done. And statements that I've made trying to explain the real significance of immigration. And finally, for a number of years, I have been a senior fellow with a wonderful organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their terrific website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. They are located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, as they like to point out, right on the Pacific Coast. Great place to visit, especially during the winter when it's cold in the Northeast where I am, and I do on occasion get out there and enjoy the warm weather and the great folks who work there. But, the immigration issue, though, as I like to point out, is not a single issue but a singular issue because it impacts so many other challenges that we are confronting today, both as a nation and as individuals. Everything from national security, criminal justice, public safety, public health, healthcare, education, the economy, the environment, unemployment. The purpose to the immigration laws is not to distinguish people by race, religion, or ethnicity, but rather to make only one distinction. And it's a distinction that the open borders crowd, the folks I call the immigration anarchists, are adamant about ignoring. And that is the distinction between what it is to be a citizen and what it is to be a non-citizen, also known as an alien. So therein lies the problem. We are in a situation today where, out of supposed political correctness, but I think it's Orwellian, the term alien has all but been stricken from the vernacular. That, folks, does not work. The point of the matter is that the term alien simply means any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. And it is for that reason that I believe we need to use honest language so that we truly understand the issues as they exist. This is really what this is all about. This is really what it needs to be about. I think we have Joe back on the line. Let's see if it works better this time. Joe,
hello.
Are you there? Hello, Joe Dugan. How are you? Joe Dugan.
Yes, my.
It's really a terrible connection. It's so intermittent, I can barely make you out. Are you on a cell phone?
I'm calling.
Are you on a cell phone, Joe?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, that might be the problem because it's really not working. I can barely hear you. It's coming in very, very broken.
Okay.
Is there a landline you could use?
Yes.
Joe, do you have a landline that you can use?
I'll call you right back.
All right, call me right back, Joe. Thank you. That's not working this way. Well, anyway, that was Joe Dugan. Hopefully he'll be able to get a better line in. Joe is the leader of the Tea Party in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and he was kind enough to have me speak at two of their conventions this past January and the January before. They hosted the debates for the presidential candidates for this past presidential election. So the work of the Tea Party is important. And I know that we've become so polarized that my friends who are Democrats, and for the record, I am a lifelong Democrat, but so many people hear Tea Party and they say, oh my gosh. And you know, one of the problems that I think America has today between the use of deceptive language by folks who have an agenda and Americans who have become intolerant of fellow Americans whose position they might disagree with is that in point of fact, the First Amendment doesn't only speak about freedom of press, freedom of speech, and freedom of religion. Everybody rattles those off, but there are two more freedoms that are enumerated in the First Amendment that the founding fathers of this great nation had the foresight to understand, and it's the right to seek redress of grievances. And I don't care what your political position, if you don't have grievances, folks, you have no idea what's going on in the world or in America. And the other issue is the right for peaceable assemblage. And the whole point of peaceable assemblage, folks, is so that you can have the disagreement, the debate, perhaps the argument, but they say do it peaceably. Leave your clubs, your guns, and your knives at home and have a debate, have a discussion. Find out where you disagree with your neighbor and try to find common ground. That's what building a consensus is all about. Compromise is the way to go, provided that by compromise, we don't ultimately succeed in compromising national security or in the future for our children, because that's really what's happening. It's wonderful that America does admit immigrants into the United States. We admit more than any other country in the world. Last year, we admitted more than 1.1 million lawful immigrants. That comes out to just under 100,000 per month. But goodness, you know, we've got to be careful who we're letting in. Let's see if this works. Joe Dugan, are we doing any better?
Hi, Mike. Can you hear me?
I hear you better now. It's a little bit crackly, but I can certainly hear you. Thank you so much for joining me this Friday afternoon.
It's my pleasure, Mike.
Why don't you tell the folks a little bit about yourself?
Okay. At the present time, I am wearing three hats, one as the chairman of the board of the Myrtle Beach Tea Party in South Carolina.
I'm losing you again, Joe. I don't know if it's the phone or the tower. Is this a cell phone also or a landline? I've lost you again. Joe, I'm really having a problem understanding you. I'm sorry to say this. I don't think anybody can hear you. Joe, this is Mike. I really can't hear you, and I don't think anybody is able to hear you in the audience. I'm going to need you to either change position if you're using a cell phone or do something differently because it's not working. I'm sorry, I can't make you out at all. I can't hear a single thing you're saying at this point, Joe. I'm going to have to ask you to try a different telephone or to change position. I don't know if it's the cell phone or where you're located. I can't even understand what you're saying. I just hear a lot of crackling and no voice right now. It's not working, Joe. In fact, it's showing on my panel that your phone isn't really hooked in properly. It's not working, Joe. No. Well, I'm hoping that we can work out the bugs, folks, because I was very much looking forward to having Joe join me on the program. There are so many challenges that Americans really need to be working together to resolve. And the way to do it is, instead of fighting with each other, as we seem to have gotten so good at, it almost seems like a reality program half the time when you watch what are supposed to be news programs where everyone is either yelling at each other or talking at each other. It's important that we speak with each other to devise ways of solving the problems that are of mutual concern to all of us. And that's really what's been lacking from the discourse that should be civil, unfortunately all too often is not civil. Really presents problems for America. It presents problems for the United States and its citizens. And as I'm sitting here doing my program, I see that Fox News just flashed that the suspect is down. I don't know if the guy is dead or if he's wounded, but apparently there is a resolution to the terrible terrorist attack that took place at the Boston Marathon. Joe Dugan, if you can hear me, I'm going to ask you to try to either use a different phone or a different position, because I so much want to have this conversation with you on my program this evening. Well, I guess unless he changes phones or does something, it's going to be very difficult for us to do the interview. But here's the point that has really not been covered in the news today. The idea that we admit people into the United States, and I'm not saying that this could have been foreseen. I'm not going to be the Monday morning quarterback. But with all of the millions of people who come into the United States, whether as immigrants or as non-immigrant visitors, tourists, students, and so forth, without any kind of real desire or ability to screen who we are admitting, who we are giving identity documents to in many cases now, especially that the current administration has embarked on processing thousands of applications for what they call DACA, the Deferred Action Childhood Arrival Program, the DREAM Act, if you will. We are now giving identity documents to foreign nationals without being able to prove who they are, and they're not even using face-to-face interviews. What's significant is that we have to have an immigration system that lives up to its two responsibilities: protect innocent lives and protect the jobs of American workers. That has been left out of the equation. It has been left out of the conversation. Neither the administration nor the Gang of Eight, I've come to call them the Eight Gangsters, are even willing to allow the president of the union that represents the ICE agents, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, to have a seat at the table. This is not a solution or a way of seeking a solution to the problems that have to be resolved. When the folks who are charged with enforcing laws that are so critical and so fundamental to our nation can't even have his voice heard as the representative of those agents, then you know that something very wrong is happening. The ICE agents bear that responsibility to conduct the investigations, enforce the laws, make the arrests, and execute the laws that, again, at their foundation, are supposed to protect us. And this is something that has got to be addressed. Unfortunately, it's not. I'm going to give one more shot and see if we can get Joe to join me here on the program. Joe, are you able to hear me? Joe Dugan. Well, unfortunately, he does not seem to be able to hear me at this point. So I'll just continue on and invite any of you who are listening, if you want to call in and join the conversation. The number to call is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. It's remarkable. They've been talking about immigration for the longest time, ignoring the true implications of it, not willing to even enforce and enact provisions of the immigration laws and procedures that were mandated by the 9/11 Commission. This is how far afield we've gone. And what was so remarkable was when I had that wonderful opportunity on both occasions, both January of this year and January of last year, and in fact, I spoke immediately after Santorum and Newt Gingrich took to the stage at the convention, and for that I certainly owe Joe Dugan and the folks who worked with him big thank you, because it was an opportunity. Lauren Martell, who suggested to Joe that he reach out to me. All of those folks, knowing that I'm not a conservative, couldn't have made me feel more welcome, could not have been more willing to listen to my perspectives on this particular issue. And what was so remarkable was that at the end of the day, so many of the folks who attended the Tea Party convention both times came up to me and said, you know, what you're saying really makes sense. And it makes sense because these issues, folks, aren't conservative and they're not liberal, they're not right, they're not left, they're just American issues. And we have gotten to a point today in America where if anybody takes a position other than what they are told is supposed to be their position, almost like a groupthink, you become vilified. For far too long, the tone of the discussion in America has gotten nastier, has gotten more uncompromising. And along the way, besides losing civility, we're losing the ability to think for ourselves and reason. And that has to be at the foundation of a democracy. And be rest assured, America is a democratic republic. We are supposed to take into account the thoughts and ideas of all Americans and then devise a situation that meets the needs of the greatest number of Americans. That's not happening today. What's happening today are corporate interests and special interest groups making campaign contributions and promises of delivering votes to politicians whose primary concern these days, well, I guess has always been the case, whose real concern is getting reelected or getting into another position of even greater power, perhaps going from the House to the Senate and that sort of thing, or perhaps winning the White House. And along the way, while they're trying to keep their job, they forgot that they're supposed to do their job. They forgot that they took an oath of office. They forgot that they're supposed to uphold the Constitution and defend America from all who would do harm to us. This isn't about keeping everybody out. It's about being selective. Just the way a homeowner looks through a peephole, America looks through the peephole at that port of entry. When people evade the peephole, when they don't come through a port of entry, and they violate our borders, then you have to worry why they didn't submit themselves to the lawful process. And it's that lawful process that is carried out by the inspectors of CBP, Customs and Border Protection, to try to keep out the bad guys. The problem is, though, that even the lawful system lacks integrity. Part of it is because the numbers are so daunting of how many people come in. And part of it, quite frankly, is because in this crazy desire to simply bring in lots of people, we're not being as careful as we should be. And what's resulting from this is the influx of transnational criminals and terrorists. What played out in Boston this week was sickening for all of us. That little 8-year-old boy being killed, that young woman in prime of her life, everything to live for, watching her mother in front of the microphones. It brought back to me 9/11 and what happened here in New York City on that awful day. And again, I'm not saying that our government could have stopped these guys, that they could have foreseen it. But the problem I have is I don't see where the U.S. government, where DHS, is doing everything reasonable. And I do mean reasonable. When all the Gang of Eight are willing to talk about is whether or not the Mexican border is secure. And then, as we like to say in Brooklyn, they have the chutzpah to say, well, we're only going to look at the Mexican border, and all they have to do is gain operational control over high-traffic areas to the tune of 90%. Well, what's a high-traffic area? If you have a place that they can't control, all they have to do is say, well, it's obviously not a high traffic area, so we're not worried about it. There's no thought being given to the millions of people that enter the United States through the inspections process and they get lost in the crowd. According to some of the reports, and it's not confirmed, so I'm just going by what I've been listening to over the past couple of days, but apparently these two brothers entered the United States, or their families did, on tourist visas, claimed political asylum, and that was their method of entry. The problem is that very often we are giving aliens political asylum without doing due diligence to find out who the folks really are, what their situation is back in their home countries. There was a case of a guy by the name of Fezhazi on just a few years ago who came here from Eritrea, and according to a press release issued by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, this guy ran the border, and within 6 weeks or less of applying for political asylum, claiming that his life was in danger in his native country of Eritrea, we granted him political asylum. As it turned out, he wasn't even in Eritrea during that time, but rather was in Guatemala, smuggling Africans into the United States through Guatemala. So understand the problem. We are quick to give out political asylum, but we don't do the background and field investigations that are required. There was another guy by the name of Amil Kansi who shot up the CIA, Pakistani national, January 93, applies for political asylum, and repays America's kindness for considering his application, even though it turned out that he lied in his application. And the way he repaid us was to stand outside the CIA with an AK-47, open fire, kill two CIA agents, and wounded three others. This is cautionary. If you see things aren't working in a particular way, then you need to reassess what you're doing and do things differently. Albert Einstein, among others, has defined insanity as doing the same things the same way and expecting a different outcome. That's exactly what we've been witnessing, watching people in our government continue to do the same things the same way and then claiming that they're surprised when things go badly. Joe, are you there? I keep trying to reach out to Joe, but this certainly doesn't seem to be working today, and I feel awful because I've been looking forward to this all week. Joe reached out to me on Monday and said, Mike, I would love to be on your show this week. And so I see his phone number on my board, but unfortunately, I can't seem to hear him. It's very frustrating. Joe, if you're able to hear me, I would ask that you try to hang up and call in one more time, and perhaps the third time will be the charm, if you can do that, if you can hear me. Joe Dugan. Well, you know what they say about the best laid plans, you know, of mice and men. This one doesn't seem to be working, unfortunately, and so much I really wanted to discuss with him. But what I want all of you out there to focus on is whether or not our government is really meeting our needs if we're going to import foreign workers at a time when so many Americans are out of work. If you have eight members of Congress who go off by themselves in a closed-door session and have this little huddle about an issue that could become transformative for America, because we're not really talking about 12 million illegal aliens. I'm willing to bet that it would be two or three times as many. That's what happened with the 86 amnesty. We were told about a million, a little bit more. We wound up with between 3.5 and 4 million. This is a big deal. This is a big deal. And yet, we had four Democrats, four Republicans go into a room behind closed doors and say, listen, when the Mexican border is secure, we're good to go. Never mind that we don't know who we're naturalizing. Never mind that we're not doing face-to-face interviews and we're giving out identity documents, which, by the way, violates the Real ID Act, which was designed to prevent terrorists from getting identity documents so that they could embed themselves in our country. This headlong rush to do something that would be really damaging to national security, perhaps irreparably so, and do incredible damage to Americans, both at the bottom rung of the economy and American high-tech workers, because one of the other provisions of comprehensive immigration reform would be to admit perhaps as many as three times as many high-tech workers. This at a time when computer programmers, engineers, chemists, biologists, high-tech workers are unable to find work. When you have people with college educations driving a taxi cab or working as waiters in restaurants because there's no other way for them to get work. This is crazy. But it makes sense if you look at what Mr. Alan Greenspan himself had to say. Because in 2009, April the 30th, when he testified for Chuck Schumer, who, by the way, chairs the Immigration Subcommittee, Greenspan said that it would be great to bring in lots of foreign workers and their families to take up residence in the homes that were lost to foreclosure. Americans who had had those houses lost their jobs, lost their houses. Some of them became homeless altogether, risked losing their children to foster care. And Greenspan's solution is let's get foreign families into those houses so we can boost the value of real estate and help the banks. Let's make sure we help the banks. I love what Harry Truman said about banks. President Truman said that banks or bankers were no one's friends. They would only lend you money after you were able to prove you didn't need it in the first place. So we have Greenspan making that point and then goes on and bemoans the fact that, in his words, too much money has been concentrated in a particular sector of the American economy. The sector he was referring to were Americans who have skills. Now, I want you to stop and think about what that means. If you have an education or you're a tradesman, Mr. Greenspan is of the belief you're making too much money. He referred to the wages of the skilled Americans as having a wage premium. And he said the solution to this wage premium, believe it or not, was to open up immigration quotas for the highly skilled workers so that we could eliminate inequality or greatly reduce inequality in wages based on skill. Stop and think about that. He talked about how there were skill shortages in America because we didn't let the world in, and what he's ignoring is how many Americans right now have lost their jobs to foreign workers and outsourcing. But don't let that get in the way of the narrative, because this is really about driving down the wages of America's middle class. And in fact, what was so remarkable was in the very next sentence after Greenspan at that hearing spoke about the need to greatly reduce inequality in wages based on skill, which I always thought was the American dream. I was taught as a kid that when you get older, you go to college, you get an education, and you'll earn more money and have a better job. Maybe Mr. Greenspan never got that lecture from his parents. I don't know where he grew up or how he grew up, but certainly it's apparent that he never heard that. But right after he talked about this need to reduce inequality in wages based on skill, he said that if we do these things, our standard of living would go up. And I remembered the first and second and third time I read this, I was scratching my head and saying to myself, goodness gracious, how in the world would your standard of living improve if we're going to whack at your wage premium, to use Mr. Greenspan's term? And suddenly it dawned on me. I don't know if any of you out there are old enough to remember the Lone Ranger and the program he used to be on Saturdays, but I sure remember it. And he had his trusty sidekick, Tonto, and he would be surrounded by Native American Indians, and it would look real bad. And there was a joke about this where the Lone Ranger would say to Tonto, "Looks like we're in trouble, Tonto." And Tonto, of course, turns to him and says, "What do you mean, we, Kemo Sabe?" Because obviously, Tonto, being an American Indian, I guess the joke was supposed to be that these were all people of his own group. Well, here, when we look at Mr. Greenspan with his joke, or not joke, but who's his group? His group, his hour, isn't us folks. It's not you and me. His hour are the people who are worth hundreds of millions of dollars, just like Greenspan and his buddies, the bankers. So what he was really saying is if we can cut down on the wages of those Americans with skills, those of us at the top of the food chain, no matter how much we have, we will have even more. And I think that he and these other members, the Gang of Eight, are looking at Mexico and saying, you know what? In Mexico, you could be fabulously wealthy. More so than even in America, because they have this little oligarchy, this tiny percentage of the population that controls the vast majority of the wealth of Mexico. Guess what? It doesn't work, but that's what they seem to think is the solution for America, to turn America into Mexico and have at it where the middle class is concerned, the privileged elite. And by the way, if you think I'm making this up, go to my website, michaelcutler.net. You can go to capsweb.org. I just wrote an article for AIM where I referred to it as unobtainium and border deception. And unobtainium, for those of you that may not know what that term is a mythical term used by engineers who, in building a spacecraft or an airplane, say things like, boy, we could build the spacecraft, but we need a new metal that's lighter and stronger and more heat resistant. And, of course, it doesn't exist. So with a little bit of humor, it comes to be referred to as unobtainium, as in we can't obtain it. So the unobtainium for immigration is verification of information contained in the files. Unobtainium for immigration is integrity to the system that's supposed to protect the lives and jobs of Americans. And border deception? Because they would have us believe, they, the Gang of Eight, the administration, the open borders anarchists, would have us believe that the only thing we need to really worry about where immigration is concerned is the Mexican border. If we can get the Mexican border to appear to be under control, then we don't have to worry about anything else. Never mind that we have between 5 and 10 million illegal aliens who never ran the border but came through ports of entry. Never mind that about 7 years ago, Citizenship and Immigration Services claimed to have lost 111,000 immigration files and naturalized 30,000 aliens without their files. Never mind that we have so many Americans out of work that 1 in 6 Americans is now on food stamps, which you would equate with being in poverty. Mort Zuckerman of U.S. News and World Report not long ago wrote a report or wrote a commentary where he said that the poverty today in America is as pervasive as it was during the Depression, but today the poor are invisible. They're no longer standing on bread lines and lines for soup kitchens. They're sitting in their houses waiting for the check to come in the mail or perhaps a direct deposit to go into their bank account. But if it wasn't for the food stamps, if it wasn't for the disability checks, if it wasn't for the unemployment checks, if it wasn't for welfare, these people would be starving to death in America. And Mr. Greenspan and Chuck Schumer and Mr. Rubio, see, it's both sides of the aisle. What do they say? Oh, we need to import hundreds of thousands of high-tech workers and lots of low-rung economic workers as well. We need more workers. Why in the world would you want to bring in more workers than right now we are bringing in more lawfully entitled foreign workers than the number of jobs that are being created? As it is, we are not creating enough jobs in this country to keep pace with the influx of foreign workers. So how in the world does it make sense to add to that millions of authorized workers who will jump into that very overcrowded labor pool, and then nobody will have a job, and the few people who do will find their wages will go down because everybody will be competing for the same job? This is classic economics, supply and demand. If you flood a market with a commodity and keep the demand constant, the value of the commodity goes down. The De Beers company, the diamond company based in Belgium, is very careful about how many gemstone diamonds they release into the market every year. Because if they released as many as they dug out of the mines simultaneously, they would drive the price of diamonds into the ground. It probably wouldn't be much more expensive than broken glass. But by controlling the supply and clever advertising and marketing, of course, we know how costly diamonds are. It's about controlling the supply to control the price. And here, it's very obvious that what Mr. Schumer and what Rubio and the rest of the cohorts want to do is flood the labor market with cheap labor, not just the folks doing manual, difficult, back-breaking work that Americans do every day. This nonsense about the work Americans won't do is a slap in the face to every hard-working American, but they want to do it in the high-tech industries also. And by the way, folks, from what I've been reading, the next big bunch of foreign workers that we're going to look to import are doctors. So not only will they have to deal with Obamacare, the medical profession, they're going to have to deal with a massive influx if these immigration lawyers and special interest groups have their way with doctors from other countries. Flood the market with a commodity, you drive down the price. But what we're doing at the same time is destroying the consumer engine that built America. If you have a company, you are probably depending on middle-class Americans for the great majority of your revenue. If we destroy the middle-class folks, you're going to destroy your source of revenue. So this makes no sense unless you're sitting at the very top of the food chain and you're a multinational corporation and you have it in your mind, well, we'll get rid of the American consumer and we'll replace them with consumers from China or perhaps some other country. Perhaps that's the equation. But I'm not even sure that these folks are capable of thinking beyond the next earnings statement. This is all about generating money now. And in the long run, we're destroying incentives for our kids to go to school. They're coming out of colleges with student loans that look more like mortgage payments than a student loan. And on top of it, they can't find work all too often. That's the situation that we find ourselves in. We need to change this equation. The American people need to be involved, and we need to be involved in having an honest discussion. And people who disagree with us aren't our enemies. They are Americans who have a different perspective. They might be right, they might be wrong. The only way that we're going to resolve it is if we actually sit down and have a conversation with one another with mutual respect for the fact that not all of us see the world the same way. That's what is missing from America today, an honest, open dialogue. And it's doing harm to all of us, and most importantly, folks, it's doing harm to America. This is why I have this program, because it's frustrating to try to go on programs and explain your perspective if the other programs don't want to hear it. There are so many people who make so much money off of the exploitation of cheap labor that the pressure is there to not have an honest conversation except for a very few programs. It's difficult to get your voice heard today because it is drowned out by the greed of those who can only think about how much money they can shovel into their accounts, whether it's corporations or individuals. It's a betrayal of the American dream. It's a betrayal of what America was built on, because the American dream was about the middle class. Destroy the middle class, and you're ripping the heart right out of America. And that's where we are today. That's wherein lies the problem. I'm going to try to get a hold of Joe Dugan. I see he's still on the line. I don't know if he's able to hear me or not, so I'm going to mute my phone for one moment, my microphone for one moment. I'm just going to try to reach Joe. So please stand by just for a moment. Well, I just got off the phone with Joe Dugan, and for some reason it works on my cell phone, but his line doesn't work on the internet today. I wish I was a tech whiz, you know, but this is beyond my area of expertise. But we're gonna give it one more shot. But, you know, I just want to make the point as to why we're here and why it's so important that as Americans we work cooperatively. We have to stop vilifying each other because, you know, this divide-and-conquer strategy is toxic. Think of how many news programs are out there today where it looks more like a food fight than a serious conversation. There's no place for that. We're better than that. You know, all Americans of every race, religion, ethnicity, we need to get our heads together and understand that we're on the same team. We may have our differences and we need to work them out. But we need to work them out in a way that serves the needs of America and Americans. And I can tell you that what's going on now just doesn't seem to be doing it. Let me see if this works now. Maybe we'll get lucky.
Hi, Mike.
Joe Dugan, is that you?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Now I've got you loud and clear. Goodness gracious. Finally.
Oh, great.
Finally. How about that? We finally got this thing working.
Well,
I want to thank you for
pays.
Being on the show.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure. It's mine.
Well, we'll run a little bit long. You know, we can do an extra 30 minutes, and we'll do that because I think that what you have to talk about is very important. You started talking about the three hats that you wear. Why don't you tell us about those three Stetsons, are they?
Well, I have been involved in the Tea Party movement since April 15th of 2009. I found myself watching TV and pulling my hair out and getting so angry and aggravated at what was happening to our country that I said, for my own sanity, I just have to do something. So I found the Tea Party, and it found me, and it's been a wonderful relationship since.
That's amazing. What did you do beforehand, if I'm allowed to ask that question?
I was director of operations for an electronics manufacturing plant in Northern Virginia.
Okay. So you had management experience, corporate experience, good background to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I for the past 3 years, I have been chairman of the board of the Myrtle Beach Tea Party in South Carolina. And as you know, I am the coordinator for the South Carolina Tea Party Coalition, a group of tea parties that we put together in South Carolina that's gets together to share our values and participate in our events. And I want to thank you, Mike, for being such an outstanding speaker at our last two conventions.
Well, the pleasure was mine. I appreciate the opportunity that you gave me to address the convention. I was very honored.
And the third hat that I wear is I am the South Carolina State Coordinator for the National Tea Party Patriots. So it keeps you moving.
You heard what I was saying, though, while we were having our technical difficulties. I mean, isn't it true that what we really need to do as Americans to get our heads and our hearts together, compromise when we have to, but work together to try to fix what's broken here?
Well, I don't know that compromise is the answer. I think that what we first have to do is have an honest discussion about the problems. We're not even allowed to have that. And
right.
And that's why at this year's convention, the way it started out is that we looked at the greatest crises facing our nation and wrote them down on a sheet of paper, and then reached out across the country to find the best possible experts that we could that would not only speak about those problems but offer solutions to them.
Uh-huh.
And I think we did a very effective job at that. The problem, one of the biggest problems that we have in this country is this whole issue of political correctness, and Americans feel that they're not allowed to talk about the real problems that we face, and so they don't get information about that, and they're so frustrated and dejected with this long recession that we've been in, that they have chosen to just huddle with their family and their friends and turn their backs on Washington.
But isn't it remarkable that with this recession that so many of these characters say, well, the solution to unemployment is to bring in more workers, even though we don't have enough work to go around now?
Oh, it's idiotic. It's absolutely
Have you ever heard
idiotic.
Anything wackier in your life?
Well, if I had a little bit more time, I could think of several things. All I would have to do is read the newspaper today.
Would you put it on the list of your top 10? Let's go there.
There is just one deception after another, from
remarkable.
This administration and the compliant press.
I don't know if they're compliant with the administration or if they're being corporate, because there are some weasels in the corporate world who are literally and figuratively making out like bandits on the deal. I think it's a combination of factors.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a combination of a lot of things, but could you imagine in just 10, 15 years ago, a president saying when a bill was rejected by Congress that would infringe upon the Second Amendment, an administration saying that, well, we'll just do it by executive order?
Well, they did it with that. They did it with immigration, the DREAM Act, which didn't pass.
Right.
So he says, well, Congress failed to act. No, that's not true. Congress did act, and it acted sensibly and voted it down. Saying no is acting.
Right.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, to say that Congress didn't act is for a guy that rapes a girl saying, well, she didn't say yes, so I decided to do it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And here the reaction is, if I don't get what I want, I throw a temper tantrum and work around Congress or ignore Congress, ignore the Constitution, and as long as I'm able to get away with it, I'll do it by executive order. Now, I'd like to know where the Supreme Court's role is in all this. I mean, we have a separation of powers in this country according to the Constitution. And,
well, he believes that. He believes
silent.
He has all the powers, and nobody has any powers. That's where
it's separated. It's all
mine.
And I thought that the Supreme Court would have a role in that when either the legislative or executive branches of government outstepped their authority.
You know what's so remarkable, too? Truth is really the big victim here also, and consequently we are. No matter how people feel about whether guns should be registered or not, and we may have a disagreement about that. And again, we're Americans, and we see things maybe from a slightly different vantage point. But what blew my mind, absolutely blew me away, was when the president said that the reason that the bill failed in the Senate was because of the Democrats, because of the Republicans, rather. He seems to have forgotten that the Democrats control the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So how in the world can you make a statement that legislation failed in the Senate because of the Republicans when, in point of fact, it's the Democrats that control the Senate?
Well, because, Mike, it's from day one of this administration, it's been a memory of convenience. And when you can't think of something convenient to remember, then you make it up.
I like that. I may have to plagiarize that, a memory of convenience. Okay, let me write that one down. That's very good, Joe. Unfortunately, I think you're right. But, you know, we've been seeing wacky stuff going on for the longest time. You had George W. Bush. Having Border Patrol agents prosecuted for doing their job, but sending Border Patrol agents to secure the Iraqi border while our border was left open. Isn't that wacky?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The problem we have, it seems, is both sides of the aisle, and it just keeps getting worse with each successive administration, it seems. But, but this administration's off the hook, really off the hook. I mean, look at what happened in Benghazi with the terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, deplorable, absolutely deplorable.
When does it end?
Well, I think what we need to do is when you get into a situation where it gets so crazy that everything is out of control, you got to step back to the basics.
And hit the reset button.
You hit the reset button and you get back to what happened when this country was formed. you had 13 colonies create, and I emphasize the word create, a federal government for their convenience to facilitate commerce and currency and to protect our borders.
And provide for the common defense.
The federal government has ignored those first precepts and gotten into everything else.
Yeah.
It's clearly stated in the Constitution that only those enumerated powers belong to the federal government. And
yep,
all
the
rest belong to the states and the people.
Yep.
The people have nothing left. Because their state governments, for the most part, have fallen into the same quagmire as the federal government.
But you see, I think the American people have abdicated their responsibility by not voting, by not writing letters, by not becoming involved. When Alan Greenspan made those scandalous statements, I expected Americans to march on Washington with pitchforks and torches demanding, a change. You know, make it clear, this is not acceptable. Why in the world would you want to destroy the income of Americans who have skills or education? Not a word. Not a whisper. It wasn't covered in the media, and nobody paid attention.
But it's a long time coming. It's a cultural change that allowed this to happen. And that cultural change started in 1919 with Woodrow Wilson. And, the America of the 40s and the early 50s was a flag-waving, patriotic America. And everybody in this country worked their fingers to the bone to support the war effort in World War II.
Yep.
All that's down the drain now. Now it's all, what can I get? What are you going to give me? They took God out of our society, or tried to, and with that, the family unit, Lyndon Johnson and his great society came up with his idiotic plans to break up the family by rewarding people who didn't have two parents at home and who had as many children as possible that they could not support, provided incentives for them. That has just continued and continued to the point where today you have so many children born out of wedlock, people don't get married anymore. It used to be the average age for a woman was 21 or 18 to get married, and a man was 25. Now, if they get married at all, they're 35 and 33. And,
you're breaking up again. But in all fairness, though, let's remember when they passed Social Security, there were very few people who lived to be 65, so they conveniently made the age of retirement 65. It was kind of almost unobtainium over there also. You're never going to get the money you put in. And now, thankfully, people live longer than 65 because I am, you know. So I'm glad that we tend to live longer than that. But I think we tend to do things a little bit longer and so forth. But the idea about encouraging people to have children out of wedlock, I think, is a mistake. And it's a mistake to provide incentives for people to have children when they're not able to financially afford them either.
Right. And then you had the women's movement come along and say that every woman should be out in the workplace establishing their own careers. And, I believe in equal rights for women. But what you lost with that movement was a parent at home with children to raise them. And
Joe, I hate to do it, but I don't know what went wrong, but we're back to you coming in almost barely at all again. This has been the day of really lousy communication. Oh, my goodness gracious. Let me try to get a website for you out there, though. Is there a website? And if I can, I'll repeat it, and hopefully the folks out there will know where to go to your website. Why don't we do that? No, I think I've lost you altogether. Darn. Joe Dugan, I don't know what to say to you. Say again? Hi, Joe. Can you give that to me one more time? I think we've lost you all together now. Well, this has been a frustrating day for this program, I have to tell you. I'm glad that at least for a while we had you crystal clear, and now we've lost you again. But Joe Dugan has done such an amazing job of putting together a political organization in his retirement. You know, I'm doing this since I am now retired. Joe has retired from his career, but he's working as a volunteer. This isn't about money, folks. This is about doing what you believe is in the best interests of our country and our fellow Americans. And you know, again, I will tell you, I may not agree with Joe on every issue, and he may not agree with me on every issue, but what we really need to emphasize is that we are both Americans, that we are trying to find solutions to problems by working cooperatively and by making the politicians accountable. Because I will tell you that if the Republican Party was doing what it should have been doing, and I'm sure Joe would agree with me, the Tea Party wouldn't have been formed. The Democrat Party is certainly not the Democratic Party from when I first started voting more years ago than I care to remember. Both parties have failed to live up to their standards that had been set years ago. And so we are in a situation today, unfortunately, where everybody seems to want to vote for none of the above. The Tea Party is an outgrowth of the frustration that so many Americans feel with their own government, feel that they have with their own government. Again, I will tell you, when you can see a congressional hearing where the former chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank thinks it makes sense to call for slicing wages of America's middle class, Americans who have trades and skills and education, this is a knife in the back to hardworking Americans. To flood the labor market with millions or perhaps tens of millions of foreign workers at a time when record numbers of Americans are unemployed or underemployed, losing their homes to foreclosure, makes it clear that this government no longer thinks it's a government of we the people. For Chuck Schumer and Rubio and the other characters, the other gangsters, as I've come to call them, to basically try to pull an Obamacare deal, and whether you like Obamacare or not, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, when Nancy Pelosi, with a straight face, could stand in front of the microphones and say, you won't know what's in this bill till after you vote for it, what I want to ask you out there, folks, is would you buy a car that way? Would you walk into a showroom and see a tarp, a canvas cover over a car, and have some salesman say to you, hey, listen, Charlie, I can't tell you what the color is. I can't tell you if it has two doors or four doors. I don't know if it has a sunroof. I'm not sure if it's a stick shift or an automatic. It might be a four-cylinder. It might be an eight-cylinder. Maybe it's got a stereo. I have no idea. But you're going to like it, and we'll put it in your driveway. Just give me a blank check, because I'm not even sure what it's going to cost you. But after you sign your name on the bottom of that blank check so that there's no going back, we'll put that thing in your driveway. Would you buy a car that way? Would you buy a house? Would you buy a refrigerator that way? How in the world did Nancy Pelosi have the chutzpah to stand there and say, you won't know what's in the bill till you vote for it, and then they approved it. It was passed. This is an insult to the intelligence of every American. It's not whether or not you agree with the idea of Obamacare. That's an argument for another day. It was the way it was done. It was the way it was done to tell people, we're not going to tell you what's in it till after it's voted for. If you think that that's reasonable, I'd love to know where else you would accept that as a standard business practice. If any company did it, the Better Business Bureau would be all over that company or that individual. But yet this is the arrogance that increasingly we are seeing with our elected representatives. We see immigration laws that aren't only not being enforced, but the local politicians and in some cases governors are bragging, we won't enforce those immigration laws. I don't care what you think about any of the issues, but the idea is that there are laws on the books, and when you're sworn in, whether it's as a law enforcement officer or as a politician, you take an oath of office, and the oath says that you will uphold the Constitution, and it is implied that you will enforce the laws of the United States of America. This is not a menu. You don't get to decide whether you want soup or salad. You have to have them all. But yet, our elected representatives, with the arrogance of power that increasingly has been seeping into their heads and their hearts, think that they can do this, that they are above the law. They're above the law, but you're not. They can encourage, aid, abet, and induce aliens to enter the country in violation of law. And the president does that every time he stands up and talks about legalization, talks about comprehensive immigration reform, every time Chuck Schumer, every time Rubio says it. You know, Mr. Rubio stood there and said, we can eliminate the problem with illegal immigration, not by trying to make people who are here illegally leave. No, we shouldn't do that. Let's leave them here. Let's just bring in lots more legally. Folks, this is the equivalent of saying that the solution to drunk driving is to raise the acceptable blood alcohol level for motorists so that if it wasn't 0.08, if we made it 2.0, think of how few drunk drivers would be on the road because of the change in the standard. Of course, you'd have a lot of dead bodies and a lot of crashed cars because you'd have a lot of people swerving all over the roadway. But if you could change the acceptable blood alcohol level from 0.08 to 2.0, very few drivers would be legally drunk. And then you could say, see that? I signed a bill, and we no longer have a problem with drunk drivers, because legally, they're not drunk. That's what Mr. Rubio thinks the solution is to illegal immigration. And it is insulting beyond words that politicians can look at a group of people and without knowing anything about them except their last name, tell you who they're likely to vote for. If some guy's name is Goldstein, if some guy's name is Rodriguez, we know who those guys are going to vote for because it's about the Jewish vote, the black vote, the Latino vote, and the journalists do it all the time. And what's so remarkable, what is so incredibly remarkable, is that if they hear a police officer stop the white kid, for example, in a tough ghetto neighborhood while he's driving a fancy car with out-of-town plates at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the cop pulls him over thinking, well, the kid was in a neighborhood where there's a lot of drugs being sold. Perhaps I should stop him. He might have come up here to buy drugs. Is he profiling? Yes, that police officer is profiling because he sees a white kid in a fancy car in a tough neighborhood. He fits a profile. But it's not the kind of profile that the journalist who would scream bloody murder about the cop are engaging in, because there's nothing situational about talking about Latino voters. It is a statement of bigotry and racism. If you're a Latino, you get to vote a certain way. It's not about situation. It's about your culture or your race or whatever. And that, folks, is an insidious form of profiling, but no one ever calls them out on it. And it's time we did. We are individuals, and when you could point a finger at somebody and say, because you know the person's color or ethnicity or religion, you know all you need to know about them, then we're almost using that disgusting phrase, those people, or you people. Think how distasteful and disgusting that word is, that phrase, you people. But that's exactly what the politicians and the so-called journalists are saying when they can talk about the Latino vote and make the point that anybody who's Latino is likely to vote for a certain candidate. It's wrong-headed, and it's not fair, and it's not American. But they do it. And the damage that's being done is exacerbated because so many Americans are afraid to stand up and take a stand and call people out when you know what you're hearing is wrong. We have an obligation, folks. We have an obligation to speak our minds. It's in the First Amendment. It's in the First Amendment. It's time we exercised it. You know, your right of freedom of speech, the right to express yourself, could become, God forbid, a vestigial organ. De facto, it almost is. The words are being changed not to prevent people from being insulted or embarrassed. And if that's the point to being politically correct, then I'm politically correct. But when words are being used in a certain way and certain words are being eliminated from the vernacular to change perceptions of reality, then we've entered the George Orwell newspeak zone. And that doesn't bode well for American democracy. It doesn't bode well for America. Joe Dugan, I want to thank you. I don't know if you can hear me, but I want to thank you for being on my program. I apologize for the technical glitches. I'm going to have to get you back when we can have a good conversation without all the static and interference. When I was an agent, I used to have a sign hanging over my desk, and it was a very simple sign, and it showed some guy frazzled sitting in front of a computer screen, and it said, "To err is human, to really screw up, you need a computer." I feel that that's where we are today. Let me again give you my three websites, folks. Please go to michaelcutler.net, go to talkborder.com, and to my good friends out in California over at Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org, great articles up there. And please take a peek at the AIM website as well. I was happy to write that article for them. It's time that we dealt with reality. We are in a time of serious problems. It's the threat of international terrorists, transnational criminals, high unemployment. And this isn't about vilifying immigrants or being xenophobic. It's just simply about saying, let's be careful as to who we let into our homes. Final thought. As the manhunt wore on today, it is remarkable that in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and elsewhere, people were told to go indoors and lock their doors and not let anybody in unless they had proper identification documents, proper ID, police officers. They shut down the trains. The highway was all but shut down. They closed Faneuil Hall, a great place. I've been there many times, great restaurants and shops, all ground to a halt. And people were told, go into your house, lock the door, and if someone knocks on the door, don't let them in unless you're convinced that the ID they're showing you is legitimate. That's what America is supposed to do with its borders. That's why we have inspectors at ports of entry. It's a job I did for the first 4 years of my career with the old INS, so it's a job I'm well familiar with. I would just love to see the day when America takes the advice that we would give to homeowners and follows it for our nation. Mayor Bloomberg criticized the prosecutor in the Bronx here in New York because he wasn't prosecuting people who trespass into public housing and said, you know something, if you don't go after trespassers, you will bring back crime to New York. Well, he's right. But then Mr. Bloomberg, what a disconnect, says, we're going to give people who are here illegally everything and anything they want. We will not enforce the immigration laws. Never mind that people that run the border are trespassing into America. Trespass into the housing projects, Mr. Bloomberg wants you in jail. Trespass into America, Mr. Bloomberg wants to give you the opportunity to stay here forever. This is crazy, folks. This is crazy. We need to wake up. We need to get the politicians to hear us. We've been quiet for far too long. We've been lousy employers. When we go to restaurants, we're very specific about the food that we want to eat and the way that we want it prepared. We would never walk into a restaurant and tell a waiter or waitress, throw some crap on the plate, I'll eat it. And if we don't like the way the food is prepared, even if they put the food that we ordered on the plate, we will send it back to the kitchen. And if that doesn't work, we vote with our feet and we leave. Don't sit out the elections, folks. Don't sit out the electoral process. Think of all the soldiers who have given their lives or their well-being over the last 200 and almost 50 years to create this incredible country so that we have that freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of press, religion, right for peaceable assemblage, and the right to vote, to have a voice in who it is that will lead the nation, who it is that will lead the state and the city that we live in. Democracy, as I like to point out, is most certainly not a spectator sport. I want to thank all of you for joining me this evening. I apologize for the frustrations with our technical glitches, but then, you know, that's the way it is. This isn't a perfect world. It does have its problems, and our country with all of its problems does make an excellent fixer-upper. So let's all get together, work together as Americans, irrespective of what disagreements we may have, and remember at the end of the day, what unites us is more important than what divides us. We're all Americans, no matter what part of the country we're from, no matter what our religion or ethnicity, we are Americans. And that's something to hang on to. Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend, and I look forward to seeing you again next week at the same time right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. So long.